Hey, Eric, you know what's coming up?
Halloween.
Spooky season. It's like the time right before Halloween season when you want to decorate for Halloween, but it's not close enough to Halloween to call it Halloween. So it's just spooky season.
So spooky season and Halloween season are different.
Yeah, they're totally different.
Can you give me the dates on each?
It's more of a feeling, you know? It's more of a vibe. And if you don't get it, you don't get it, so... I get it. You might not get it. Okay. All right. But anyways, spooky season's coming up. That means haunted houses, haunted ghost tours, Halloween parties,
costumes,
scary movies, cider. Ooh. And
fall.
Yeah. Fall's the overall season, mm-hmm. But there's a lot of mini seasons within fall. And I just taught you something.
Thank you for that.
So, speaking of spooky season and, you know, the game we're going to be playing, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Does your family have any secrets or curses that I need to know about? I didn't think to ask you this before we got married, but it's come up.
We do have a very specific curse. I don't like to go into a lot of detail.
Oh, yeah?
But it involves us not being able to wake up before 7 a.m.
Yeah, it's a very scary thing.
It runs deep within my family tree.
Yeah.
So what about your family? Do you have any crazy family secrets you want to share? Build the beans out?
Yeah, everyone that's ever owned a VW has mysteriously gone into a car accident and died in their VW.
Wait, for your family?
Yeah, everyone that's owned a VW car.
Specifically in your family.
Okay, maybe making that up. I don't think my family has any cool curses. If curses can be cool, you know. Just a normal, regular old family. Nothing spooky or eerie going on over here.
Okay, so not a car specific curse.
Not a car specific curse. But anyway, the game we're talking about today, the family does have a curse, and it's called What Remains of Edith Finch. Sounds like a ghost story, doesn't it?
What Remains of Edith Finch is a first-person exploration game developed by Giant Sparrow and published by Annapurna Interactive. The story follows the 17-year-old Edith Finch, the last surviving member of her family, as she returns to her ancestral home for the first time in 7 years. And I feel like there does need to be a spoiler warning on this. The game really is basically a story, and it's a pretty short story.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking about it. I'd also like to throw out some content warning stuff, because the game does involve a lot of death, and it also involves infant and child deaths as well. So if that's not something that you can listen to, then maybe skip this episode.
Sounds good.
All right, well, are you ready to get into it?
Yeah, let's do it. All right, Nikki.
Eric.
This is a game I assume was made by AAA big label studio.
Mm-hmm.
Is that basically what the history is?
Oh, yeah.
EA turned out another storybook game.
Yeah, you know them, always doing those 3-hour story games. So actually, I have pretty good amount of stuff for the history / development. And so I'm going to sort of start out with more of the development stuff. And then go more into how the story was created, if that makes sense.
Cool.
So, from what I found, the game's been in development since at least 2013. And it could have been a little bit before that. But this is like when Giant Sparrow originally partnered with Sony Computer Entertainment to create What Remains of Edith Finch.
So they partnered with Sony?
Yes, originally.
To make this game?
Originally, yes.
So, okay, I guess you're going to get into more detail about that. Okay.
Oh, yeah, because it all changes by the end. So, They even, in 2014, at the PlayStation Experience, they announced the game on stage with a trailer.
So 2014 is a pretty good ways away from when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
So they already have a trailer that early.
Yeah. From what I read, the original trailer also had like a much darker, spookier, scarier tone to it. But anyways, that's neither here or there. And then at this point in time, the game was going to be published by Santa Monica Studios, which that should sound familiar.
It sounds super familiar.
And they do all the God of War games and like kind of a huge company.
I thought they were a developer.
So they do developing and publishing, I guess, which it seems like a lot of companies or gaming companies do
and they're,
both, but
they're part of PlayStation. So
yes. So that's like, Sony, it makes sense why that they would be working on this game with Sony Computer Entertainment. And then even in 2015 at E3, they released another trailer for the game. So it's looking like, okay, Sony's on board. They're like, they've released two trailers by now. The game should be coming out at any time. However, during this time period, Sony, I guess, had to do some reevaluating with their funds because they started pulling back on their support of independently developed games, which I'm guessing is probably why Santa Monica Studios also dropped the game at this time, since they work so close together.
So Sony pulled the funding for the game.
Yeah, well, they pulled their partnership, and yeah, Santa Monica Studios also backed out. So at this point, it's not looking great for what remains of Edith Finch, you know?
Yeah, you would expect it to be maybe further along at that point, or,
yeah,
or pretty much finished.
Yeah, considering like how short the game is. But it turns out, call it Kismet, call it Destiny, whatever you want to call it, several people at Santa Monica Studios, they all left and decided to form their own studio called Annapurna Interactive. Is it all starting to come together now?
Yeah, so they just happened to maybe pick up this game as a game they're publishing.
Yeah, since they had already been working with Giant Sparrow.
Wow, that's convenient, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess they were thinking, hey, we're starting our own company, we need a game to make. We've already been working with these people, and they have a game that's probably almost done at this point. Sounds like a good first game. Or maybe not their first game, but, you know, a game to start with. And this actually ended up working out really good for the game because they were a lot more relaxed about the deadlines. And then they really allowed the game to, like, be fully fledged out and fully finished.
Yeah, making
sure
they
didn't rush it.
Making sure it gets up to that 3-hour mark.
Yeah, they didn't make them rush it or, you know, cut out certain stories because they didn't have time to do it or anything like that. So
that's pretty funny. Like, you're going to have to cut out at least 3 or 4 family members from this tree. Sorry, Giant Sparrow.
So now that we kind of know how the game got developed, I would like to segue and talk about how the story started out.
Okay.
So,
like, the story of the game or the story of the making of the story?
The making of the story, I guess.
Okay.
Basically, the making of this game, because it is all story. But anyways, did you know that this game started out as a simulation game?
A simulation game?
Yes.
So what were you simulating?
So I'd like to ask you, Eric, what kind of simulation game do you think this game started out as? Like, if you had to guess.
I would say it's a friendly way to put a human murdering simulation game.
Well, I mean, no one's getting murdered, hardly. Maybe one person, but like...
Well, yeah, usually you would play the unknown force that was murdering the people.
So like an accident simulator or
exactly.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Wrong.
Okay. Second guess.
Oh, okay. Fine. You get two guesses.
A ghost simulator.
Also wrong.
Okay. Third guess.
It's something random.
A house. Like you have to like control a... Well, that's too much like Sims. Yeah. House building sim?
No. I don't think you will ever guess it. Well, maybe if you had like 20 guesses.
A grave digging sim.
No. No. Has nothing to do with death, usually. It started out actually as a scuba diving simulator.
Yeah. It's interesting because none of the game takes place under... Well, no, I take that back. There are some scenes.
Yeah, you play as a shark for a little bit, and so...
That's about the only scene I can think of.
Yeah, so that actually was like what they started with. It was...
Scuba diving.
Was the shark similar... Yeah, scuba diving. So what happened was... the games director, Ian Dallas, was in grad school way back in 2007. And he had been reading a lot of H.P. Lovecraft at the time and other, like, weird fiction kind of stories, and was inspired by the feel of things being ominous and overwhelming, but not necessarily traditional horror. So I guess while he was reading all these stories and he's thinking about, you know, things that feel ominous and overwhelming, he thought of scuba diving. Yeah. Dallas, he's a lifelong scuba diver. He's been scuba diving since he was a kid. And he said, thinking about the bottom of the ocean and seeing it slope away into infinite darkness kind of captured the feeling that he was going for.
Oh, yes.
For the video game.
So not scary necessarily, but more...
Being overwhelmed and, yeah, ominous.
Uncanny. I like that word.
I guess.
I think uncanny is the best word to describe
this game. For some reason, uncanny makes me just think of like a joke or something. But, you know, you do you, Eric. And with that being said, you can probably guess now that they actually started working on the mini games first and then came up with the stories for each family member.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So,
does it?
Yeah. Exploring the house isn't really the game, you know. That's just the thing that's tying all these other instances together.
Yeah, but in my mind, you would start with the family's story and then make the mini games to, like, tie into how they died. Not the opposite way around. Coming up with the mini games and then deciding how they died.
Yeah, but when you don't quite know what you're making, you know, you're going to throw your hat into the ring and try a bunch of different stuff. You know, and how do you make that still work? It makes a lot of sense to do it that way.
It's just, to me, logically, it seems like it would go the other way. But I guess to you, it seems like logically it would go the way they did it. But when I was playing the game, I thought, oh, well, yeah, they probably came up with all these stories first. And then trying to come up with a mini game and style to kind of fit the way that the death was. But yeah, I was wrong. And it was like totally opposite way.
Yeah.
So the story ended up being born mostly out of necessity to connect everything together, like you said. And yeah, I just thought that was kind of cool that they did it that way. I mean, I've never made a video game, so I feel like I learned a little bit, like if I ever want to make one.
Just make a bunch of mini games and then tie it together with the story.
Yeah, or don't always think of it like so linear. You know, you don't have to have like... the idea of the story and the idea of the main character first. Maybe if you just have the type of game you want to play, or like he did, like the feeling that you want to invoke when people play it, you know, you can start from those points also.
Yeah, and that theme is prevalent throughout the game, that uncanny, spooky, whatever word you want to use for it.
Yeah. So they eventually got everything done, and the game was released in 2017 on PlayStation 4, Windows, and Xbox One. And then in 2019, it was released on Switch and later for PlayStation 5 and Xbox X. So you can pretty much play it on whatever you have.
On whatever works for you.
I'm surprised this isn't available on mobile as well, because I feel like it could probably work for that, but maybe that's to come in the future. Who knows? So, Eric, are you ready for some fun facts?
Yeah, let's do fun facts.
About this game all about death.
Yeah.
I wanted to start with the best fun fact because I know you and you're going to love this.
All right. Yeah, let's do it.
Because it has to do with one of your favorite artists, someone who inspires you.
The Mountain Goats.
Someone else who inspires you a lot.
That's funnier. Weird Al.
Yes.
Nice. My two favorite bands.
What do you think Weird Al would have to do with this game?
Well,
it's a trick question because he has nothing to do
with
this game.
Yeah, I was about to say, I don't think he has anything to
do with it. But he almost did.
What?
Yeah, they wanted to bring in Weird Al Yankovic to compose a song about Edie, but the idea came too late in development and they ran out of time.
Also, you know, do you have to pay Weird Al to do that? Like,
I'm sure you do.
Do they have money? Do they have Weird Al money is what I'm asking.
Unless you're best buds with them. Maybe one of the developers is like friends with Weird Al. Who knows?
I just love the idea. Oh, I forgot to ask Weird Al to write a song for this game. It's like,
I'm assuming it got far enough to where they were in talks with Weird Al, but then when it came down to it and figured out how long it might take him to make a song and stuff, you know, they just didn't have that kind of time.
Yeah, you gotta plan ahead for Weird Al.
Yeah, you do. He's a busy, busy guy. Anyways, fun fact number two.
That was a really good fun fact.
Thank you. In Edith's room, you see many paper creations, like origami. And if you look closely, you'll see how they relate to the family members. There's a shark, a seal, a boat that allude to Molly. There's a deer for Sam, a frog for Gregory, a kite for Gus, and Lewis imaginary citizens, knights, and a king with a cape. There's also a paintbrush and an astronaut helmet.
And the game wants us to believe that she origamied all these different things herself.
When she was a kid, I guess it would have been her room when she was, 10? So... And then if you also look around the room, there's like a few books that teach you how to do origami and stuff. So it all comes together, you know, it makes sense that she knows how to do these origami
pieces. You got to have the books to explain why you have such detailed origami.
Got to have those books.
But
they thought about it. That's all I'm saying.
I didn't actually notice the origami when I was playing the game, so I'll have to go back and look for that.
There's actually a lot of Easter eggs in this game, so I feel like you probably could play it again and find a lot of things now that you know more about the stories.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that fact because, I mean, they've filled the house with these little details, and you could definitely get lost, like, just staring at every little thing.
Mm-hmm.
Every little crook and nanny, or is that the right word?
No. Nook and cranny.
Every little nook and cranny. I'm definitely editing that. Yeah.
Fun fact number three. This game won Best Narrative at the Game Awards in 2017 and the Game Developers Choice Awards in 2018. So despite the game being not very long, it still won a pretty good amount of awards and stuff. It was received pretty well. Most people thought it was really creative. So,
yeah, I agree with that. I mean, the story is good. And that's really what you have to do if you're going to make a story good, is just kill off all the characters.
Well, we know what your stories are going to look like whenever you write one. But yeah, that's pretty much all the fun facts I have for now.
Cool. Yeah, good fun facts.
Do you want to just talk about the story, like just give a summary of the story?
Sure. Let's go ahead and spoil the story for everyone who isn't going to play the game.
Yeah. A quick summary of the story is you play as Edith Finch, who is a 17-year-old pregnant woman.
That's a twist on the end, right? Like you find out she's pregnant, or is that known throughout the entire story?
Well, if you're paying attention throughout the story, you kind of can tell that she's pregnant. There's one point where you look down and you can see the belly. She also makes a couple of comments about her size and stuff.
So if I were paying better attention, I would have picked up on that sooner.
Maybe. I mean, they tried to keep it subtle, so it was more of a surprise. But if you're paying attention to all the little things, and especially after you know, you can kind of look back and be like, oh, well, that makes sense why she said that, you know. But anyways, yes, 17-year-old Edith Finch returns to her childhood home after her mom passes away. And she's re-exploring the house, each room reveals a family member's death. So each room is a family member's room, and it kind of when she's in there, she learns about their death.
Yeah, I thought that was a very strange part of the story, because I've never heard of a family who would seal off a room after someone died.
Well, the family and the house seem to be cursed, which is a big part of it. Most people don't seal the rooms off, but if you paid attention to the story, you'll know that Edith, eventually, she starts to go crazy with this curse and everything, and she ends up, like, sealing everyone's rooms off.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everyone in the family has had these untimely deaths, and in the end, major spoiler alert, you also die, as in Edith Finch.
What?
You also die.
I die?
While you're giving birth to the baby.
That's kind of sad.
Yeah. It's a bummer.
Yeah.
But I mean, it shows that the family curse is still alive and well.
Yeah. I don't think sealing off the rooms really helped all that much.
I don't think it did either. But, you know, grief and I don't know. You start to go crazy.
In fact, I feel like it probably even might have contributed, just because it's like, instead of being able to use the rooms that you already have, it's like you have to build these extra rooms in kind of unsafe places.
Yeah.
Like, on like,
well,
further up.
That makes sense, because if you look at the house, it's a very hodgepodgey looking house that does not make a lot of sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Architecturally.
I'm just saying, so maybe sealing off the rooms, not the best idea.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. I don't really think that's a part of the story, except to make you kind of take these roundabout routes to the different rooms. I think that was the main reason for that.
Yeah, but, and it is a convenient way to tell the story, because you can see what they had in it.
And each person's room kind of gives you a really good idea of their personality and what they were into, and maybe how they died also.
Yeah.
So that's about all I have for the summary. I'm sure we'll talk more about the story a little bit later, but that's like the overall.
Yeah, that's the basic gist of it. I mean, you could go through every family member, but that's just going to take too long.
Yeah, we still want people to play the game. And then if you already played the game and you're listening, you know all the stories anyway. So yeah. Anyways, do you want to go into the pros and cons?
Sure. I can start us off.
Let's start with what we like about the game.
So if a game is going to completely rely on the story, then the story better be good.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, in this case, the story is good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a little bit spooky, but I would maybe describe it as also kind of sad.
Yeah.
And it definitely sticks with you, like, after you've listened to it. Not every video game story stays with me, but I feel like that one probably will, just because it is an interesting story.
Yeah, I like how they go into each family member's death, and each family member's death has a different style of gameplay and a different art style also. So not only is the gameplay different, but the art style is different too for each family member, which is really cool.
Yeah, it was a nice touch.
But the stories themselves are set up in a way so it's not like hit you in the face obvious of how the person died. You kind of have to, or at least some of the stories, you have to take a second after you played and think like, oh, well, how did that person die? Because they don't show you exactly. It's kind of more of a metaphor feeling kind of thing.
You can usually infer it. You can usually infer it, but it doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't usually come out. And well, there are a couple stories that they do kind of hit you in the face with exactly how it happened. But
yeah, but a lot of them, it's kind of like, oh, well, I think that's how they died, but is that really how they died? And you think about it a little bit, and then the whole curse and everything, I thought was really a good spin on the game. And I think they just found a really good story to tie all the mini games together, like how they developed it, you know?
Yeah. So it's also cool how the game mechanics usually relate to the character's death.
Yeah.
Like the girl where you play as her dreaming of being different animals and eating stuff. And it seems like she died by eating inedible things.
Some poisonous berries.
Yeah. Or the guy who liked to take photographs, and you figured out like he died by trying to take a photograph of him and his daughter.
With a deer.
With a deer who was not quite dead.
Yeah.
But yeah, stuff like that where it's like, okay, you're playing through this character and the mechanic somehow relates to how the character passes.
Yeah. And one story that stuck out in particular was the babies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Story. And this is sad, but the baby basically drowns while they're taking a bath because the mother is preoccupied. But the way you play the story is not as sad as it sounds.
Yeah.
Which, and a fun fact for that, well, not fun because, you know, it's not a fun topic, but they actually did bring parents in to playtest a lot of the stories because they wanted to make sure that they handled it in a very sensitive manner.
Okay, yeah, that's good.
And make sure it wasn't too much for people. Because it is a very taboo subject to talk about death in general, but especially not adult deaths, you know?
So, yeah, 100%.
Yeah. I like that this game is spooky and creepy, but it's not scary. Like, it's eerie, and there's the curse, and there's the family, and everyone's dying, but it's not jump scares and gore and what you would think of for your typical horror game. I think it goes back to when I was talking about the history and the overall feeling and stuff that the developer was going for, you know, was something more non-traditional horror. And I think they accomplished that.
Yeah, I agree. To me, it could use a little bit more blood and guts and maybe a few scares, but it's fine.
Says the person who doesn't even watch horror movies.
I don't like horror movies, but I like horror games.
Yeah. I think this is a good warm-up to, you know, our beginning of scary games series. Because we have a few scary games coming up.
Yeah, this is definitely
so
like...
this is a good warm-up.
A low-tier...
Yes.
Scary or spooky.
Yes.
One of the things I liked is that the game is, like... you could definitely consider this art. Like, the individual components of the game really stick out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, almost in the way, like, they would at, like, an interactive museum or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I definitely got that impression that you could break it up into pieces and probably put this in a museum or something.
Oh, yeah.
Because it is very pretty.
Yeah, it looks really nice. Also, I like how they did the words for the story. They would have the words of what you're saying written in the scene somehow. Like a book. But it was neat because when you would walk through the words or the letters, they would kind of scatter or move, like you would actually hit them. And I thought that was a really cool
visual
trick. Yeah, a really cool visual effect that they did with that.
Yeah, it was really nice. One thing I liked about the game is that it is very short, which is good because then it doesn't feel like it's dragging at all. So you go through it and it doesn't drag because it's like only a couple hours.
About 3 hours,
two and a half hours, 3 hours.
Yeah. I like that too because not every game needs to be 40, 50 hours.
I totally agree.
It's nice to just be able to sit down and play a whole game in one afternoon if you want and just get one story, kind of like a good book or whatever. Just sit down and get through it.
Yeah.
I also really like the music for this game. The composer for the game also did the music for the Fargo TV show and a lot of other stuff. And they're very talented. And I thought the music in this game just fit everything so well. Like every story had their own music and stuff like that.
Yeah, the ambience and music was really nice. I agree.
And then one other additional fun fact that I just remembered is...
What?
Yeah, which this is kind of obvious. You know the story of Barbara, the Scream Queen, and they have her play through or her story is sort of comic book style?
Yeah, I actually really like that style of how they told her story.
So did you notice any similarities between that and another old show that used to come on back in the day?
Something Crypt.
Tales of the Crypt.
Yeah, Tales of the Crypt.
Yeah, so that whole part was basically a spoof or a satire of like Tales of the Crypt episodes.
Cool.
Even the little host that they have narrating that part of the story is a spoof on the Tales of the Crypt guy. You know, the skeleton.
Yeah.
Decomposing guy. Cool. And they got permission to use the Halloween theme song for that part.
Oh, yeah, I think I remember that.
Yeah. I think that's most of the pros I have. Overall, I really liked the game. I thought it was a nice departure from the last few games that we've played.
Yeah, it was It was okay. It's not really the game's fault, but like this style of game just isn't really for me, I feel like.
Yeah.
I prefer the game's story to be secondary to the gameplay.
Okay.
While I like the story, I need some kind of like mechanic to get me absorbed into the game.
All right, that's fine. I like it. I like this type of game occasionally. It's not one I'm going to just only play, you know, but when you throw it in the mix with some other stuff, it's a nice refreshing change of pace, and I liked it.
Yeah, I mean, if you just want something really simple that's mostly focused on the story, then this is a great game.
Yeah, and if you're not really good at platforming and don't have some of the other game skills that you need to play some other types of games, you don't need much skills to go through this game.
Absolutely not, yeah.
The mini games do have some game mechanics to them, but they're really simple. So I feel like if you're trying to get into gaming or you just want to play more, this might be a good just warm-up starter game.
I 100% agree with that. Yeah. So what's something that you didn't like or thought could be improved about the game?
So one thing that I will say, I don't think $20 is a fair price for this game. I mean, I know you have to pay your employees and everything, but if the game is less than 5 hours long, I don't think it should be $20 or more.
Yeah, I agree with that.
We got it on sale for $5, and I think that was pretty fair to what I would want to pay for a 3 hour long game. But yeah, I will say, like, I wouldn't recommend buying it full price.
Yeah, I 100% agree.
Just because it is so short. Not that it isn't, you know, beautiful to look at and fun and all that, but 3 hours, so short.
So yeah, just a real general con for me is the game is a little bit too linear for me. I actually thought it would have been really nice if the game would have let you kind of explore in a less linear way.
Mm-hmm.
They could have kept in like all the secret passages and stuff, but like made it so you could just go to whichever room you wanted and play it in whatever order you wanted.
Yeah,
more along that lines, as opposed to just kind of like following a specific path through the house.
I can see that.
Yeah, I mean, take the leash off, take the reins off, let me go where I want to go.
Yeah, so this is the second game for me that has given me, I'll put it air quotes, motion sickness. So two of the mini games kind of made me feel like nauseous.
Which ones?
The very first one, when you're playing as Molly and you are like the Kraken character, squid character, whatever.
Yeah, something like that.
That part made me sick. And then the swinging game where you had to just swing back and forth so that you go all the way around.
Yeah, I like that part.
That was kind of funny because like every kid tries to do that.
Yeah.
But it made me feel a little sick. Luckily, it didn't last that long. But I discovered that there's a name for that, and it's called simulator sickness. Because I knew it wasn't motion sickness because you're like, I'm not moving, right? I'm not in a car, I'm not on a boat or anything. But yeah, it's called simulator sickness, and I guess I get that every now and then.
Huh. So
just random games, I don't know.
What's interesting is like you never got that at all playing Cyberpunk, right? Or something like that. That was very heavily action oriented.
Yeah, I don't think it matters how much action. It's just the way the graphics are. If the timing is even a little off or something, maybe it throws me off. Or I really don't know what causes it. I just know I've gotten it with two video games.
Dang.
So it doesn't happen very often, but it did happen just a little bit for this game. And, you know, I didn't like it. I had to stop playing. I couldn't play it all the way through because of that, even though it's so short. I only played it about an hour at a time, I think.
Yeah. So one of my cons is, we kind of mentioned a little bit, so the game is basically the story, and once you've heard the story, you don't really have a lot of reasons to go back and keep playing the game or do anything with the game again, unless you just want to hear the story again.
You can pick up all the Easter eggs and like...
Yeah.
And listen to the story a little more, pick up on more details that you probably missed.
Yeah, I'm just saying there's not a lot of replayability in this game.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I probably won't need to play it again.
Which, you know, it's a short game that's not very replayable. And yeah, to your point where it's like, yeah, $20 is going to be a little bit too much for that, I think.
Yeah, but we got it on sale and
$5.
$5.
Yeah, $5 so seems fair.
Just look out for it to be on sale if you want to play it.
I agree. All right, so we're skipping strategy because Nikki doesn't think this game has any strategy.
I think we should just skip the strategy for this one. It's pretty straightforward.
Okay, yeah, I agree.
Read the story. That's all you need to do.
Walk through the house, look at the different things to look at.
Yeah.
And yeah, okay.
Did you find anything about the future?
I did. So according to their website, the next Giant Sparrow game is in its early stages of development, with the focus being on exploring wonders and horrors of biology through interactions between humans and urban wildlife.
Oh, okay. Sounds interesting.
And when they're ready to talk about it, they'll make an announcement on their Twitter page.
Okay, so it's kind of more of a rumor at this point.
Well, they've announced that they're working on a game.
Okay.
They just haven't announced the game itself.
And there's no trailer or anything like that.
Nope. They said when ready, they'll tell us.
That is some flimsy news, Eric. That's some flimsy future news right there.
That's all I got.
Cool, cool, cool. So, Eric, we're to that part where we talk about the challenge I gave you, which was beat the game. And I'm pretty sure we all know that you did beat the game because you're talking about it.
Yes, I completed the challenge of beat the game.
But if you were to give a challenge now after you played the game, do you think there was any better challenge?
No.
Yeah.
There's not a lot you could have done with that.
Yeah, there's not a lot. Maybe some of the trophies that you could get and stuff, but yeah, just beat the game was fine.
That's
fine. And you did it. Good job.
All right, so do you want to hear what game is next? Do you have any guesses?
Of course I want to hear.
Obviously.
How else am I going to know what game to play?
Do you have any guesses? It's obviously going to be scary.
Something scary. Something with zombies.
Probably.
Something with guns, right?
So we're playing...
Something with blood.
All right, so we're going to do Little Nightmares.
Oh.
It's a game we actually already had. I think we got it for free on the PlayStation
Plus. Yeah.
But
yeah,
I
remember that. I remember seeing the art for it, or the poster art, or whatever, game art, whatever you call just the graphic that shows up in the store. I saw the art for that. I thought it looked really cool.
Yeah. So we've had it for a while. I've heard good things about it. I figure, hey, let's talk about it. Let's play it.
I mean, it sounds scary.
We already own it, so we don't have to buy anything.
It has the word nightmares in it, but only little ones.
It's an indie game, so...
Oh, yeah. I love indie games.
All right, so for your challenge, you're going to have to hug some gnomes. You'll need to hug...
Yard gnomes? Lawn gnomes? Garden gnomes?
I think they're obvious.
Okay. All right.
You'll need to hug 7 out of the 13 total gnomes that you can hug in the game.
What a charming, heartwarming
challenge. I assume
this
game is mostly about hugging things.
Probably, because that's most people's nightmares, is having to hug people, right?
Social anxiety.
Some people's, it is. Awesome, I can't wait to play it. I've been meaning to play it for a while, so that's kind of awesome that you picked it.
Yeah, me too.
Now I have a reason to play it.
All right. Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Till next time.
All right. Bye.
Bye. If you enjoyed this episode, do us a favor, leave us a review on Apple Podcast, rate us on Spotify, and more importantly, we would love to hear your opinion and thoughts on the games we're playing. What's your favorite stuff? What do you like about it? What don't you like about it? Let us know. All right, we'll see you next time. Bye!